morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. It feels like a minute, doesn't it, Tim? It feels like a long time since we've done an episode. We did the two interviews last week, but we did them early. Kind of staggered them in preparation for the birth of my child, which hasn't happened yet. This little stinker in my wife's belly has just gotten comfortable. Multiple doctor appointments later, baby's still doing fine, but there's no urgency to leave. You know, she had an appointment yesterday, Tim, and just baby's fine. Nice and healthy, getting tons of oxygen. Umbilical cord's good. And then the doctor's like, all right, we'll see you next week. I'm like, all right. All right. So here we are again. We just are kind of in limbo. We have an interview scheduled for Thursday with a former number one overall pick. So this is a big deal. You know, it's a bigger deal, and it's scheduled for Thursday. And knowing my luck, she'll go into labor Wednesday night, early Thursday morning. Then, well, you'll do the interview solo, I'm imagining, Tim. Maybe. I don't know. So that's where we're at with that. But sorry, everybody. It's been a minute. I know. Like, our last episode was Thursday, but we haven't talked a couple weeks. Lots changed since then. Right, Tim?
Well, beyond that, it's been a few weeks, and it's been just you and I. And it feels like that's important. We got to have our catch-up time, our one-on-one time, and get to know what's going on in each other's lives, which is one of the big reasons that we wanted to get together today to hear about the big updates like the baby that you mentioned and also what's happening around your property.
Well, I don't want to lie. We were trying to get an interview, but I wasn't getting responses. So let's not, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes here. We were trying to get an interview. We got a lot of people tentatively scheduled, but it just didn't work out, and so here we are. But before we get into all of that fun stuff, this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. You should open an account today with Bet365. You can bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it is never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. That's HOCKEYCA at Bet365. Speaking of sports, the Olympics, Tim, are going on. Catching any of that stuff?
I watched a little bit over the weekend. I was actually thinking, I saw a Bet365 commercial when I was watching, I was handball. You ever watch that one? That's pretty cool. It's fun to watch.
I've seen videos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know the rules per se.
I don't either, but it's fun to watch. So a little bit, just sort of in the background when I'm around the house, but I don't really sit down to watch too much of it. What about you?
Well, no. I again, lifestyle choice. I don't have a TV. You know, it is what it is. Okay. But, should we touch on the opening ceremonies at all, or just avoid that complete, disturbing? Like, what are we doing here? And I don't want to go down this road here. The Olympics is supposed to be fun, supposed to be all ages. Let's watch the opening ceremonies. It used to be just a fun time, right? Sit down. It's going to be neat. All the athletes are walking around. It's going to be great. The big fire is going to explode. I loved it. Now they got all kinds of stuff happening, and I don't want to go down that road, but it was weird, man. And then I'm a Catholic, completely attacking the Catholic faith. You can't get around. Now they're backtracking. Oh, you know, it was the Greek god of this and that. I'm like, BS. No way. They're coming after the faith. It's wrong, you know, and I'm not going to sit here on my soapbox and get after it, but it's wrong. It should not happen. Just do the stinking opening ceremonies. Let the athletes walk around, do a dance routine and be done. All these agendas, all these other garbage that's happening. It's just bizarre to me. Since when did everything have to be a political movement? Can't we just focus on sports? Can't we just have fun? Or no, everybody's got to get their message across during everything. Just it's sports. Leave sports. Just let the athletes have fun. That's all. But everybody's got to get their point across. It's all this and that, and like I we need to make sure we get our message across. Why can't we just watch the sports? I want to see LeBron hold the flag. I do. I don't want to see some guy with a beard walking up and down with no clothes on, some lady who's, you know, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to have to edit this episode a ton, but it was just, that's where we are in this world. That's where we're at. So anyways, we did the baby update. People have been texting me nonstop, Tim, about you. How's Tim in his love life? Did he get engaged? What's the status? How's his girlfriend? Did he get cold feet yet? What's the update there, Tim?
No major updates. Everything's going well. Julia's doing great. She had COVID last week into the weekend. First time for her in like 2 years or something. So it's I've heard a little bit about it making a comeback, and people are starting to get it a little bit more. And I think at this point, it's more just like a bad cold. And the big difference being it just really knocks your energy out more than like a cold or flu would. But she's back to normal now. Just rest and like cold medicine. And she's a pretty healthy person. So she was down for the count for 3 or 4 days, but she's back. Went to the office today. Everything else is good. We're doing well. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Should we get into the COVID talk about the efficiency and effectiveness of vaccines and should we go down that road again?
Yeah, let's just get all these now. Let's cancel this whole episode.
It's just funny that you even tested
for COVID. Yeah, I think she had a kid at home from forever ago. And yeah, weird. It's weird.
I didn't know she had a child.
A kit, a testing kit.
Oh, I sounded like kid.
No, a kit. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
You got to really pronunciate those D's and T's because it could get confusing for us. She's got a kid at home and the kid gave it to her. Whoa, Tim. Whoa, okay. Which is not a bad thing.
So, okay, checklist. The baby, Danielle. We talked about my dating life. Let's hear about the chickens. That's another thing that people have been asking about. What's the latest there?
How many have died? Before we get into that, you sent me a text of some former tough guy, Brant Myers. Pitcher, remember that tweet? We had a George LaRocque interview and this guy came after me. He's like, I can't believe you think you could beat up George the Rock, this and that. I'm like, Brant, take it easy. Like, pump the brakes. This guy was like coming after me. Do people not understand sarcasm? And just like guys having a good time? It was very funny.
All the YouTube comments in the last 2-3 weeks have been really, not all of them, but a lot of people upset about that, thinking that like you're ribbing the Rock and not being respectful to him, which is, of course, anyone that knows our show and knows you just knows what you were doing there. And it's strange that Brant Myers would tweet that at you, because he clearly just is that meme of the plane flying over the head.
Friend of the show, Brant Myers. Love that. Tough guy.
Was he on?
No. His name's not big enough. No.
But the other thing people are mad at you about is the whole 6'4" captain thing. The people, this is the funnier one, that like they don't understand the joke, that they're listing a bunch of captains who are small, like Gretzky and St. Louis and all these other guys, and I don't know, Tony Amonte, whoever else, and like they're 5'10", 5'11", 6', and they think you're a moron and a dummy for not knowing that. I don't know. It's just silly. It's silly. It's a joke.
Gretzky was not a good captain. Just throw that out there. Mark Messier was the leader of that team. He was the heartbeat of the Edmonton Oilers. Let's just throw that out there. Huh?
How tall is he?
Moose, probably 6'2". Yeah, he was an excellent leader. And times have changed, people. You can't go back and say, well, this guy, Maurice Rocket Richard, is only 5'6". It's like people are growing. Society is getting bigger. Nowadays, I want to see my captain being tall, 6'4". It's funny when people see clips of this show and it's just in a vacuum. They're not someone who listens consistently. And they just see those one-off clips. And I must come off as a huge a-hole. You know, when they don't know the ins and outs or the inside jokes. So, but I don't think that's a joke. I think captains should be tall. I wouldn't respect a captain who's 5'8", 5'9". I just
makes me the older days of like politics being tall, like before TV, like 1800s, being tall was really important. You had to stand out above the crowd to deliver your speeches, and people literally looked up to you, and that was a big effective tool. Yeah. And then the radio came along and it didn't matter as much because all that mattered was your voice. You still campaigned, but across the country, it was your voice. Yeah. And then the TV came on. That's when it mattered to be like full head of hair and decent looking and, you know, decent face, and height mattered again with the debates and everything. But yeah, that stuff does matter a little bit. It's interesting.
George Washington, 6'3". Abe Lincoln, I think he was 6'5".
Yeah. And he was running against Stephen Douglas, who was like 5'5". He was a very small man.
Imagine the contrast when they're doing a debate. Like it makes a difference. That's why Tim and I do this show apart, because he's very short and he feels
I'm 6'2",
inadequate.
Closing in on 6'3". I'm still growing.
But anyways, moving on, the chickens are doing well. The coop is doing well and in full function. We got the net over the top. We haven't lost any chickens. It's been very nice. I guess the thing now has just been hot. Kids are giving them water daily. We let them out every once in a while. But that's the thing lately, the last couple of weeks. I looked in the coop and they have a good run, but they just look sad, kind of inactive. They just kind of walk around. So we let them out and you could just tell they enjoyed it. They want to be out. And so now we let them out a lot and they just roam around, but I try to keep them off the front steps and I'll open up the front door and there'll be a chicken right there, right in the door, pecking at the door, trying to get in. I'm like, come on, you guys, stop pooping on my deck. The other day, it was funny. My wife was just outside with the little kids and all the chickens came running up together, huddled, all of them running up the driveway. And there was a little tabby cat chasing them, like an orange cat trying to get at the chicken. So predators are still out there, but we haven't lost any. We've gone on trips and they've been fine. And everybody's been laying eggs, Tim, laying crazy eggs.
What we haven't heard a resolution on is your mother-in-law and the dead freezer chicken.
Still in the freezer. Still in the freezer. As far as I know, still in the freezer. The kids go over there and she'll just drop hints. When your dad, is your dad going to get this chicken out of the freezer? It's like, my dad, he doesn't want that. So there is still no solution to that. But if she ever gets like in trouble with the officers, they're going to go check that freezer. They're going to think it's a human head. Like it's just, it's weird. It's
he wants you to come get it and bury it.
And I told her, if I get it, it's going in your dumpster. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just being, you know, the Reddit thread. Am I the a-hole? Yeah. Maybe I am. Maybe I should have just got it and buried it. But she's like now the argument's gone from like, well, it's just not right to the chicken. Now it's like, this chicken gave you eggs. You need to respect this chicken. Like, what, are you crazy? Like, what?
So is because Danielle just staying out of it?
She could care less. Like she's got a baby. Like she could care less. And I think it's enjoyable, the back and forth, because I'll just egg her on. Like, do you hear noises from the basement? Is does the box move? Just like it's ridiculous. But yes, no, it's still in the freezer as far as I know. Yeah, anyway, say, can we move on to hockey stuff, Tim, or is there anything else we should cover? Let's get to the hockey.
Is there anything to do with the property? The last we heard was that they knocked down the wrong trees and created the straight path when it should have been winding, right? I mean, we haven't heard anything in the last 3-4 weeks on that.
Well, you and I were talking before we came on. So my driveway is a little bit trickier. It's a one track kind of dirt, grass, some sand and spots. I have big trucks going back to my property, you know, concrete trucks, big bulldozers, like just huge, you know, trucks. Two times in the last 3 weeks, trucks have fallen off the front of the driveway into the ditch, completely blocking the driveway over on the side. This latest one happened yesterday. My wife was going to a doctor's appointment and the electric company was in. Because we're getting the power from our current house back to the house that we're building, and they have to do a big trench and all that. So there's a lot of machinery that comes along with it. This poor kid, Timmy's young, probably 25, takes the corner to enter my driveway. He forgot he was pulling a trailer. And it's not a small, like 5-10 foot trailer. It's a long trailer hauling a huge piece of machinery. And he cuts the corner, and all of a sudden the trailer goes right in the ditch. And it's not like a 3-foot ditch. It goes down 6-7 feet and the trailer sinks and it's just stuck. And we're like, man, Danielle's trying to get out. She had to, you know, postpone her appointment and we're dragging this thing out. It's just ruining my driveway. And then the time before that, it was a concrete truck. A fully loaded concrete truck over the side, tipped right over, leaning on the side.
How did they get them out? How did these trucks get out?
Big ass tractors. No, big tractors. The first one I think was a big tow truck that came. And this last one, luckily we had a big backhoe excavator and he slowly but surely came down, yanked them out. But it's just like, how does that happen?
Have they poured foundation or anything yet? Or is it still just footings, property?
Footings are in. The frost wall is up, the 3-foot block wall, the septic is in, electric is in, the drain field's in. They have to do an inspection, then the plumbing and electrical goes in, then I come in with the in-floor heat. and all that. And then they pour the foundation. We're not doing a basement. So it's slab on grade. Everyone, why aren't you doing a basement? I don't want a basement. Okay. It's extra space for the kids to run around.
You just don't want to pay for a basement. That's all.
It was only an extra 10 grand. I don't want a basement. I don't want it. I just think I had a basement in my old house and never used it. Collects dust. It's just a waste of my time. Oh, yes. I'm sorry, everybody else there who has a basement and they love, but it's just not. It's not for me. You know what is for me? Hockey news. Okay. Can we move on to that? There's lots of hockey news to talk about. Lots of signings. And that's been the big thing hanging over a lot of teams right now, the Carolina Hurricanes especially. They tried to sign Jake Guentzel. That didn't work out. He jumped ship, went to Tampa Bay. They need to secure the talent that they have in-house. The main guy right now that's been bandied about in trade rumors for the last 3-4 months, what are we going to do with Martin Nikas? This guy wants to leave. He wants a bigger role. He said it to the GM. He said it to the management, the coaches, everybody who will listen. He's shouting it from the rooftops. Trade me. I want to be a first line guy. I want to be on the first power play unit. I want to be the guy. I've been scoring goals the last few years. I am a star, a budding star. I need an opportunity. I'm not getting it here. The GM for the Carolina Hurricanes said, no, we're not. What's it? Tuski, whatever it is. He said, I'm not trading you. You know, unless we get a really solid return, you're under control, man. That's how it works. Well, lo and behold, cooler heads prevailed. They have signed Martin Nikas to a 2-year, $6.5 million contract, avoiding arbitration. Good deal, I think, for all parties involved. It's a shorter, obviously tiny, tiny bridge contract for this guy. He was hoping for a long-term deal, possibly in a newer market to get that opportunity. No, he's going to stick around with the Carolina Hurricanes for one more year. What do you think of this deal? You're a hometown guy, Tim. Do you like it? What are the ramifications of this deal? Only 2 years.
Yeah, well, one of the big ones is 25 years old, so he's going to be a UFA at the end of this. And that's kind of that plays to his favor, which is why he's willing to sign a little bit under market. I think he probably wanted more, thought he deserved more. Also is frustrated by the fact that he can't prove that he deserves more because he doesn't feel like he's been getting the ice time that he deserves. So I think based on his stats right now, 6.5 is probably about right. He thinks he's worth more, and he's going to have a chance to prove it over the next 2 years. And I wouldn't be surprised if part of that negotiation involved maybe not promises, but at least like, you know, having some conversation about ice time, about power play and about his line mates and that sort of thing, saying, I want to be on the first power play, like just, you know, making that known. I don't think that would be any sort of part of the agreement, but I'm sure that was part of the conversation at least.
Yeah, it's just interesting because there's reality and then there's your expectations of how you see things. He thinks he's a first line right winger. Okay. Seth Jarvis is your first line right winger. Seth Jarvis is younger. His potential and ceiling is higher. And right now, today, he is better than you are. So if I'm the coach, if I'm Rod Brindamore, and I have this guy just complaining, I want to be first line power play. I want to be first line. I want to play with Sebastian Aho. I want to play with Tvechnikov. Okay, that's great. I wanted to do all these things too. Me speaking, John Scott, I wanted to be a second line guy. I wanted to be a first line defenseman. When does reality get through this guy's head? You're not the first line guy on the Carolina Hurricanes. That's Seth Jarvis. You guys had the opportunity to battle for that spot, right? And Seth Jarvis won. He got 33 goals last year, 34 assists. He played great in the playoffs. You got 24 goals, Martin Nikas. You know, like there hasn't been a slight on him. As far as I know, in this organization, I think everybody's been given a fair shot. So to me, it's just a case of a player maybe thinking he deserves more than he's earned. But we'll find out. I think 6.5 is a lot of money for a guy who's only scored 24 goals last year and he got 28 the year before. That's a lot. So we'll see how it works out. But the rubber will meet the road. And if I'm the Carolina Hurricanes, and this is where ice time actually is the greatest asset that the Carolina Hurricanes have for this guy. Because if his contract is only for 2 years, and next year, sorry, in 2 years from now, if his contract's up and they're angling for a new deal, why would you want to play him on the first power play unit? Why would you want to play him on the first line? When you have a better option in Jarvis, when you know you're just going to drive up his price if you want to re-sign him. So it's an interesting conundrum you find yourself in. Do I want to re-sign this guy? Yes. How much do I want to spend? Not that much. Do I play in it? And I guess you're sabotaging your team. But when you have a good option in Seth Jarvis, it's like, okay, you're going to stay on the second unit. You're going to stay on the second line. That's how you want to play it. Fine. That's how it's going to be. We'll put Jack Roslovic up. He'll be on the second line. Then we'll really drive down your value. Then when you go and you're a free agent at 27, maybe you're only making $5 million a year. So it's a very tricky situation. I'm sure they had talks over a longer term, maybe a shorter 6-7 years for $5-6 million. He went for the 2 years. He's betting on himself. We'll see how it goes. But I don't know. I just don't know if this guy has that potential. We'll see how it works out. I don't think he gets the minutes that he wants. But anyway, what do you think, Tim?
Well, I like these types of situations where it's on the player now to prove that they're not only worth this, but they're worth more. And if he does what he thinks he's going to do, he's going to get a big pay grade in 2 years. And just whether it's with Carolina or on the open market, he's going to have control. He's going to be entering a UFA. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to watch him over the next couple of years. We'll see if he has another level he can reach. And it's in his hands completely, which is nice. But on the flip side of that, you mentioned Jarvis. He's still unsigned, 22 years old. They have about $6.5 million in cap space, which is not going to be enough to lock him up long term. So I'm thinking, do you think he signs like a 2-3 year deal at somewhere around that number to bring him to still under RFA control for the next contract? Or do you think they try to make some cap magic happen and try to get him up to like 7 over the next 7 years, something like that?
I think you have to lock him up long term. I think this is a guy who is going to be very, very good for a very long time. He's only 22 years old. He's coming off his entry-level contract, and he has just done nothing but improve every single year. We had him on the show, 2 years ago? And he was just this young kid, but you could tell he was well-spoken. He was motivated. And he even at that point, talked about doing a team-friendly contract, saying, you know what, I would take less money to help the team. Because we asked him, like, you're coming up. You know, your ECL is here. What are you going to do? And he's like, you know, I would take less for our team if that means us winning a Stanley Cup for sure. But if I'm him, you're 22, you see Aho makes 9.7, Svechnikov makes 7.75, and Nikas makes 6.5. He's going to want to be in the 7.5 range, right? He will want to be in the top tier of guys on his team, but it's a tricky situation. I think you want to lock him up for 8 years. At 7.5, and then you do the cap hurdles afterwards. You get this guy locked up because he is the core. Him and Aho are your future. That's it. Like, those are the two that are going to drive you into the future for the Carolina Hurricanes. There isn't a lot of really high-end talent on this team. And those two guys are so important. You have to keep them there. But what do you think? Just a bridge?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything, and I'm surprised he hasn't signed yet. I'll have to read up on that a little bit more, but I think it's a little strange to me that they signed Nietzsche's first and not Jarvis. That's the part that I'm kind of tripping up on, but of course, you know, he could sign any day now. I'm sure he'll sign before camp starts.
Yeah, I think Nietzsche's will turn into an Anthony Duclair situation where he's just going to continue to sign these 1-2 year deals. And this was the time when he had to sign the long-term deal. I don't see a team after this, when he's 27, locking him in for a 7-8 year contract. So that'll be his future. Okay. 2-year, 3-year deals at the most. So not a bad thing. He's making 6.5. Isn't that wild? That's a lot of money. Speaking of a lot of money.
Speaking of wild
and a lot of money, Brock Faber just signed a huge ticket with the Minnesota Wild, re-upping him for an 8-year $8.5 million contract that will kick in at the end of next season when his entry-level contract is up. And that takes him to age 30 when he will become a UFA in the year 2033. Huge money for a kid who would have won the Calder had Connor Bedard not been Connor Bedard and just played fantastic this past season. But Brock Faber, very, very close behind, made it a very interesting race and really revamped a defense that was in flux for the Minnesota Wild. What do we do? Jared Spurgeon out of the lineup consistently with injury. You get rid of Ryan Suter. You get rid of who else they just left? Dumba was gone. They relied on this guy so heavily last year. One of the highest TOI on time on ice average in the whole league. Really did it all. And he was just a young kid coming to the University of Minnesota. What do you think of this deal, Tim? 8 years, 8.5. You love it?
I love it. I love it for both sides, for player and team. I think team especially. I think this is going to be a steal in a year or two, which is why Garen's doing this now, which is the earliest he can, right? This is the summer that he can lock him up before his contract expires next year. And there's a video that was floating around this morning of him signing the deal. And you see his mom's right there and he's with Garen. And Garen's making jokes. So you can back out now. It's not too late. He goes, no, no, no. I want to sign this thing. And the way his mom looks at him is just, she's so proud. It was pretty cool to see. And then Billy Garen said something that I really liked. He said, you know, it's not just about what you do on the ice, but the person that you are, that we want to commit this money to you. And he said, hockey players are unique in that they constantly want to earn the money they get paid. They never rest, but don't try to earn it all in one game. And he's like, don't try to do too much. Don't try to be someone you're not. We're signing you for the player you are, and we want that over 8 years. Don't try to like do something that is too much or whatever. So I thought it was kind of cool, a nice message, especially for a young kid that, you know, we've seen that from other guys before, that they try to do something that they're not. So I think he's a stud, obviously, time on ice, all situations. He's the great contract. I'm very excited for them.
Yeah, it's a steal. Like an absolute steal. When you look at other comparable contracts throughout the league, he won't even be the top 10 highest paid defenseman in the league next year. And as the salary cap continues to increase and money is being spent left and right, especially for the type of player that he is, you need a guy like Brock Faber to win a Stanley Cup. You need a defenseman who can move the puck, be a threat. That is the new NHL. And you look at the deals that have been given out lately, that's a very reasonable $8.5 million contract. You got Fox a few years ago, signed a $9.5 deal. You got McAvoy a few years ago, signed an identical $9.5 million deal. You got Darlene recently signed for 8 years, $11 million. All of a sudden, that $8.5 that doesn't kick in till next year, looks really, really good. This is a guy who is a very, very similar to a Cale Makar. Smaller, fleet-footed, moves the puck, really silky smooth, does it all, and you're getting him at 8.5? That is an incredible contract. And this is a going trend. I went back and I just did some comparables with him. Quinn Hughes signed a 6-year, 7.85. Heiskanen, 8-year, 8.45. Cale Makar, 6-year, $9 million. All of these guys are signing their deals right out of their entry-level contract years for the 6, 7, 8 years on a decent term, $7 to $9 million. Setting up a phase in the NHL that would not have been possible 10 years ago. GMs had more control 10, 15 years ago, where they would sign a contract to a player to the 24-year, then sign the big ticket. So they'd become a UFA 32, 33 when their career was over. Kids nowadays are very smart. Their GMs are very smart. They know they hold a lot more control than they did in years past. They can hold out. There's their RFA. There's all these different situations where you can have some control. So GMs, in turn, are having to sign these contracts for these players that are very player-friendly. Quinn Hughes, he'll be a UFA at age 27. That's amazing. Cale Makar will be an UFA at age 28. Heiskanen in 29. McAvoy in his 20s. Fox in his 20s. Darlene will be 30-something. Faber will be 30 just because he played college. You would never see that 10, 15 years ago. The influx of amazing superstar talent that'll be a UFA when they are in the prime of their careers, unheard of. Unheard of in any other sport. This is amazing. We're going to come into a time in the next 3 years, you'll have the ability to get Quinn Hughes, you have the ability to get Miro Heiskanen, and you can get Cale Makar. In a three-year window, Tim, potentially three Norris Trophy winners. And I forgot Fox and McAvoy will be right there with them. Five Norris Trophy winners in their prime will be on the free open market. That's amazing. It's amazing. So good for Quinn Hughes, really good for Brock Faber. I know he probably could have gotten more had he held out for another year. $8.5 million over 8 years is a lot of money. And he's, why bother? Just get it, lock it in. Great deal for the Minnesota Wild, great deal for Brock Faber, but just great for hockey. I think it's amazing when guys are UFA and they're just in the prime of their career. It makes it fun. Who wants to pay the most money? Like Austin Matthews is going to be there. Mitch Marner is going to be there soon. But it seems like the defensemen are holding a little more sway when it comes to these contracts, and they're doing it the right way. Right after ELC, you're 20, 21, sign a 6-year deal, 7-year deal, and you're a UFA, baby, 28. It's going to be amazing. A couple Norris trophies under your belt, you're going to sign $15, $16, $17 million contracts. It's not that far off. Mark my word.
you list all those names, and you kind of think, okay, well, obviously, probably Makar and Heiskanen are going to sign before they hit the market. Like, they're not going to go to open market. And a lot of them will. Maybe most of them will, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. One or two of these guys is going to be a 29-year-old superstar UFA with all the cards in his hand. It's going to be so much fun to watch.
But then, on the other side of the coin, there are still Seth Jones of the world. It's like, Darnell Nurses of the world. You know, Dougie Hamilton. Injured, makes $9 million. It just, it doesn't age well in some cases. Erik Karlsson makes 11.5. Doesn't age well, but it's fun when they're in their prime and they're playing really, really good hockey. But gosh, I think Billy Guerin knocked it out of the park. When you put a grade on it, it's A+. Yeah. He's not even top 10 in the league as far as contracts. And he will slowly slide down that list as guys come up for UFA status. He will slowly fall. He'll be like the 20th or 25th ranked defenseman as far as pay grade goes, and he could potentially be top three in the NHL.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how much offensive upside Faber has, because he's going to be relied on so much to do everything, especially defensively with the minutes that he logs. He logged, 47 points in 82 games last year as a 20-year-old rookie. It's outstanding. Can he be a 60, 70, 80-point guy? Is he a 50-point defenseman? I don't know yet. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And you don't need him to be 60 points in order to be valuable because of everything else that he does. But is he more of a McAvoy where that's his ceiling? Or is he? Could he be a Heiskanen or a Hughes where he's putting up a point per game?
I think he's a Hughes. I think that's his projection. I think he'll be 70 to 80 points a year once he gets comfortable and once he gets just confident. So anyways, moving on. Opposite end of the spectrum as far as defense talent go, we will from swift-footed to just a big bruising defenseman. Old school, 4, 5, 6 defenseman, shut down, punch you in the face if you need it. Arbor Jack guy, Montreal Canadiens. We had, what was his name on last week?
Eric Engels.
Eric Engels on last week talking about the Montreal Canadiens, just telling us how they're going to be Stanley Cup contenders always and forever. You mentioned Arbor Jack guy coming off his second or third shoulder surgery. Well, he just signed a 2-year, $1.3 million deal with the Montreal Canadiens. Pretty premier player. When you think of Montreal Canadiens, obviously you got the top line. You got Caulfield. You got Suzuki. Those guys, everybody thinks about them. And then the next one is Arbor Jack guy. He is the guy. The lights are on this year. And when he played, he was one of the most entertaining players. 1.3, Tim. What are your thoughts on this? And only 2 years. Seems like a weird contract for him, doesn't it?
Really weird. Yeah, I would love to have seen this get signed before we had Engels on because I want to ask him about it. But you look at his numbers, nothing blows you out of the water. He's averaging like 10, 12 points a year, but he's also only played about 50 games a season. So he's missed some time because of injury, the shoulder surgery. Super valuable. Not, points is not the first thing that you want from him because of what he does defensively, physically, and obviously when he sheds the mitts and sticks up for his teammates. He is the guy. But I'm surprised it's low. I would have thought he's more valuable. I don't know where this contract came from, where this number means. Wouldn't you have expected something in like the $4 million range rather than 1.3?
That's a little high. 2.5, you would think, because he is decent offensively. It's not like he's completely inept out there like the other tough guys. He can, fill space and fill time, and he can kill penalties, and he does have other assets than just dropping the glove. So he isn't this one-dimensional fighter. He can eat up minutes, but I think it's the injury side of it that really scares everybody. Can you stay healthy? Can you be out there for 82 games? So far, the answer is a resounding no. You go out, you make an impact, and you get hurt, and you're on the shelf for 2 to 3 months. Wash, rinse, repeat. Can this guy stay healthy for 82 games in 2 years? If you can, then you'll get $4 or $5 million. Then you'll be in the Zach Bogosian, those types of players who are we'll chip in offensively every once in a while, but we know we can lock you in defensively. You're a prick to play against. You're hard in front of the net. You'll drop the gloves when you need to, and you're just a solid defenseman. That's who he could be. Right now, there's just too many question marks. It's a great deal for both team and player, I think. 1.3 is not a small amount of money. It's just enough to kind of, put some food on the table. But he does deserve more if he can stay healthy. Did you see that? I saw that Michael Pezzetta did a breakdown of his salary. He makes like $750. Montreal tax is like 43%. Then you got the escrow of like 10%. Then you have all your living expenses. And he just really, the take home is not as high as people think. Being an NHL player in Montreal, you really only take home, if you're making $750,000, I would guess $100,000 a year. After, when it's all said and done, like that's what's in his bank account. because it gets whacked in half with taxes and escrow. So you have 300 some grand, 370, and then you pay for your house and your car and your expenses and this and that. And that takes out another 200 something. So you're left with maybe 150, Tim, maybe 200 if you're smart with your money. So it's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
But if you're making league men and you're in a state or a province that gets taxed really heavily, it's hard to save. When I played in California, that was the huge case. That's why we lived one street over from the good neighborhood. You know, we just never could afford, if we wanted to save money, to live where all the, you know, million dollar players live. In Arizona, there was Scottsdale, and then there was a street over, and that's where I lived. In like a literal, not an old folks home, but it was one of those bigger communities where old people, like the snowbirds, would come down. So I would finish a game where I'd be all beat up and I'd go down to the hot tub, all old people. And they'd be in the hot tub. Hey, Johnny, what's up, baby? And they'd be all from like Calgary and Edmonton and northern provinces. And they would come down and they'd be shooting the breeze, playing pickleball and sitting in the hot tub. And I was the only young guy, only young player. It was pretty funny to just hit the pool and just bomb around with these 67-year-old people. All right, moving on, Tim. We got to go. We're talking a lot. I feel like we're getting a little chatty. All right, what's the next one here? We got Travis Konecny, Philadelphia Flyers. He signed an eight. When I saw this, I was blown away by the amount. I guess he had a little bit of leverage. The Philadelphia Flyers have been hemorrhaging players. Danny Briere has been doing his best to revamp this lineup, try to make them competitive, jettisoning out a lot of talent, not, you know, overpaying for players, getting rid of Hayes and Giroux. And is Risto still there? Like, no, Risto's still there. A lot of guys in the back end. You needed to keep somebody. You obviously had the issue last year with Sean Couturier, your captain, not happy. The really only one constant on this team last year was Travis Konecny. He showed up every single night. He was a pest to play against. He put points on the board. He was a solid, solid Philadelphia Flyers, and he's been that way for the last few years. He wanted to get paid for it. He's not going to win the scoring race. I think he averages around 60 points a year. So he's not going to, you know, dominate the Art Ross Trophy or the Maurice Rocket Richard Trophy, whatever trophy you get for scoring a lot of points. But what he is a salt of the earth, blue collar guy who brings it every single night, and he wanted to be compensated for that. To the tune of $8.75 million a year for 8 years. $70 million for 8 years for a guy who puts up 60 to 70 points. Whoa. You're talking big time money, big time responsibility, huge, huge amount of dollar for this guy, in my opinion, Tim. What do you think of this deal for the Philadelphia Flyers with Travis Konecny?
Well, this is one we talked about in the spring, and I don't think it was an official report, more of just a rumor that came out that he was asking for like more than $10 million. Wow. And we're kind of like, okay, clearly he's not going to get that. Maybe that's not substantiated. Maybe it's just a tactic. But I think I'm okay with this number. I think if you're looking at some things in his favor, he's increased points for four straight years with 68 last year. He's increased goals for four straight years. He had 33 last year. He's able to stay on the ice for most of the season. He's missed a handful of games each year, but nothing crazy. And I think if you're the Flyers, like you said, you can't keep letting these guys go. You've got to, you know, make your mark, and this is the guy that they want to build around. All that said, you can't keep producing like this. Like, you've got to take it to another level. Like, this is a futures bet. This is a futures contract. This is not a 30-goal, 60-point player contract. You've got to prove that you're worth it. And that's the part that makes me a little bit nervous. If you're a Flyers fan, if you're Briere, like, you need 40 from this guy.
Yeah.
You need 70, 80 points every year. You need to be making some playoff berths and everything. So if he does what he's done, this contract is overpaid. But if he takes a step up, which he thinks he's going to, and you have to hope for if you're a Flyers fan, it'll look okay.
Yeah, I just don't think there's any more room there to grow. I think he's plateaued as far as his output. Like, he's 27.
Yeah.
You know?
But he also hasn't played with very many high-end talent.
But is he going to in the near future? When you're making that amount of money, you have to be the play driver. You have to be the facilitator of the goals. You're driving the play. When you look at other guys in this league who make $8.5, $9 million, it's Kirill Kaprizov, it's Jake Gensel, it's Barzal, it's Rantanen. It's these types of players. Are you that guy? I don't think so. I think you're in the tier down. It's a lot of money. Like, Philippe Forsberg makes 9.5. Drysdale makes 9.5. You know what I mean? I don't think he's those players, Tim. I really don't. I know he has other intangibles, and usually I'd get behind this guy's, but I have to call it like it is. For $8.5 million, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze. I don't think it's going to end well for the Philadelphia Flyers. This is, in my eyes, a $6 million player. That's the nice landing spot for him. But when the market's a little thin, and like Tim mentioned, you need to keep some guys in Philadelphia. You have to pay a little bit more to keep them around. Philadelphia is not a destination anymore. It's not like the years past when players clamored, I want to play with Voracek, I want to play with Giroux, I want to go and play with Pronger. We're going to compete every single year and maybe win a Stanley Cup. Those days are over. It's not like that anymore. Their defense is porous. Their forward group, I like, actually. I don't mind. I like Morgan Frost. I like Tippett. I think there's nuggets there. But this is not a team that's going to contend for a Stanley Cup in the next 3-4 years. Maybe down the road. We'll see how things pan out. But 8.75, baby. That's a lot of money. That with money becomes responsibility, Kim. Can he handle it? I think he can. I like him, but it's just a lot of money.
A big part of that is going to be that Mishkov kid that just came over last week. The cool picture with Briere and what's his name, picking him up at the airport, Jonesy. So can he be an immediate first line impact player? That's what they're hoping on. That's what they're hanging their hats on. And if he gets some, you know, chemistry going with Konechny and Farabee, some of the other top line guys, this will be okay. But it is, like I said, you've got to get more from Konechny than you've gotten so far for this to be worth it.
Listen, there's two contracts we just talked about making 8.5 and 8.75. Faber and Konechny, 1,000%. Every GM, every owner, every hockey fan in the world would take Brock Faber.
Right? Yeah. Yep.
Like not, there's, yep. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So,
nope.
Like, it's just, that's a lot of money, 8 points. Imagine those negotiations, how that went. I want 12 a year. And like, Jonesy's not, are you crazy?
Crazy? You're six. Yeah.
Let's go six. Like, look at your points. You got 68. That's just your high. Your comparables are nowhere near 8.75. All right, I'm going to leave. I'm going to walk in a year then. Hold on. Let's try to, you know, meet in the middle here at some point. That's what Gary Bettman did with us. Every stinking negotiation where our contract was up, he would just try to rake us under the coals. We're going to take away this. We're going to take away that. We're going to take away that. And then, you know, we're going to institute an escrow and we're going to do like, it was just insane. So when we came out of it and we're like, you guys, we got our own rooms on the road. This is great. Like, okay, we also got an insane escrow and he took away all this and there's a salary cap and we just got murdered every time. Like it was just from where we started though to where we ended up, we thought we did great, but he just pushed the bar so far away that when the negotiations were over, everybody was exhausted because we would have to just argue every little thing like tooth and nail. Then he would finally go, all right, I'll give you that. And we just felt like it was a win, but it wasn't. It was just him just trying to ask for so much. And then when the negotiations were over, we're like, what did we actually win? We didn't win anything. The only thing we got a pension out of it 1 year. And that's the one we held out until Christmas. And I was 300 pounds when they called me up. Like, we got to get back to work. I'm like, oh, here comes Tubby. Like, get ready. I'm not eating for a month straight. All right. The last deal I want to talk about is a deal that hasn't happened yet. It's Tim's team, the Boston Bruins. Friend of the show, Jeremy Swayman, coming off an incredible playoff run. Basically, carrying the Boston Bruins in the first round over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Getting them versus the Florida Panthers in a great spot where he was the only guy showing up, basically. He doesn't have a deal yet, Tim. Why? Tell us. You're an insider. What's going on there?
I don't even have a clue. I'm getting nervous about this. I read an article. I Googled him this morning. Like Jeremy Swayman contract. Just like what's been written about this? Because I haven't seen anything on Twitter. Like none of the beat guys are talking much about it, which is surprising to me. I feel like this should be like an everyday, like, has he signed yet? And the article I read was basically like, it was titled like the news update, the latest on Swayman. I'm like, okay, great. And it was like, okay, he hasn't signed yet, but he might soon unless he doesn't. It was like, okay. Thank you so much for that information. So honestly, I don't know. He has until December technically to get it done, but I think there's like an arbitration window or a hearing window between now and September 18th, I want to say, when preseason starts. So I think it's going to be sooner than later, but it makes me nervous that it hasn't been done yet. And the fact that this hasn't even really been a topic of discussion in the hockey world in the last couple of months, or at least weeks anyway.
No, they get Elias Lindholm and sign him to a big 4-year, $7.75 million deal. You got Poster, Marchand, Coyle. You have, you know, your roster set, but you get rid of Linus Allmark. You have Korpisalo. You bring him in for $3 million in that strange trade. Jeremy Swayman wants more than $9 million. He wants to be paid like a premier goalie in this league. He thinks he deserves it. He's 25 years old. He's played great his whole career. He's coming off a team-friendly $3.475 contract that he got in arbitration. He feels a little slighted by the Boston Bruins. Maybe this plays a factor in this, Tim, where it's like, you guys didn't want to play fair this last time. You take me to arbitration. You embarrass me, this sort of thing. That's it. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Do you think that plays a part in this, the last round of negotiations with him?
Probably. Yeah, he's seems like a guy. We know that he was not happy with how that went last summer. But I think the most confusing part about all this is that they traded Ullmark without a deal in place for Swayman. Like, the timing of it is a little bit suspicious or, like, strange that they didn't make that deal having already at least had some kind of handshake agreement with Sway. We can do you make the trade, then you sign him up the same week, the same day. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Here we are a month and a half later, and it's still not locked up. And that's the part that's really strange to me. So I don't know why. I don't know what the deal is. Like I said, I haven't heard anything, but I am really hoping this gets done sooner than later, because you do not want this hanging over the team and the organization heading into training camp. It's a huge distraction, and it creates all kinds of confusion and questions. So get this done now.
Yeah, and they really could use a couple more forwards right now to round out the roster. They only have, I think, 20 roster players right now, 21. So they're in cap hell right now. They really have nowhere to go. They have 8.7 free, 8.636. Swayman wants 9. Something has to break. You either have to make a move and get rid of one of your forwards or defensemen, make some cap room, or you have to convince Jeremy Swayman to take less money. I don't know what the answer is here. But you spend a lot of money to get Zadorov. You spend a lot of money to get Lindholm. You short up the back end and the second line center role. What's next? It's the goaltending position. And Swayman has a ton of leverage. And he's pissed off. So that's not a good combination when it comes to negotiations. Your best player, which is Swayman, is mad at you. So it's interesting, Tim. Where do you see this landing up? Do you see him signing a team-friendly deal? Or do you see the Bruins having to shift some money around to make him happy and give him plus $9 million?
There's not a lot of money to shift around, like you said. Like, they probably have enough, just enough to make a deal. Like, I thought he was going to sign in the $9.5 million range. But the longer this holds out, the more I think he wants more. Maybe he wants Bobrovsky money, because if he's going to sign long term, he's going to want what is going to be a good deal for him in the future, not just now. And you don't really have a lot of assets you can move. A couple of the players on their roster, if you look at Puckpedia, you can, like, okay, he's coming down. That clears up maybe another million and a half, but there's not a whole lot of wiggle room. So you haven't just enough to get this done. But if he wants a lot more, I don't know what you do. I think you've got to get him locked up. Maybe it's a shorter term deal. Maybe he doesn't want to sign for 9.5 by 8 years. Maybe it's, lock him up, please. Please.
It's not an NBO. Don Sweeney's in a tough spot. He really is. And by the way, your captain is a UFA after this season. He's going to want a new contract too, Brad Marchand. So,
but why? I don't understand. Like, why make the Ullmark deal when you did without the Swayman piece? Because it's not like they got so much, like, a deal that they couldn't pass up. It was too good to say no to. Like, you did. It was more of a salary dump. You did okay. Didn't do anything.
They didn't dump any salary. That was the issue with the Ullmark deal. You give up his $5 million, but you take Korpisalo back at $3 million.
Right. So you cleared up just over $1 million, basically, when all said and done.
Yeah.
So it's not like. The only reason to make that move when you did was that you had a chance to sign Swayman in that week, in that window, and you didn't. I won't keep saying it, but this is scaring me.
It's self-inflicted based on the court. They should have never taken Korpisalo. You sign a veteran guy to a $1 million deal, or bring up a young guy you have in the systems who is ready to be promoted.
They have one of the best goaltenders in the AHL last year.
Yeah, but apparently they want to have Korpisalo play for 4 more years, by the way, at $3 million. Like, he's got 4 years. So you will be paying two goalies over $12, $13 million when it's all said and done. And I say this all the time. You don't need a superstar goalie to win a Stanley Cup. And the Bruins are going to find out real fast when they cannot put a roster together because they invested $13-plus million in the back end. Good for them. See how it works out. And then good for you, Tim. Thanks for joining us today. And everybody else, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the support. We're going to do a nice interview on Thursday, unless my baby figures it out and gets born. Then we might have to adjust. But we appreciate the support. Hope everybody's having a great summer. We miss you guys. We'll talk to you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.